some of them are gaining more followers from some of the stuff because they're doing a little bit better job at it than some of the others. But others just aren't getting any traction on it. It's just kind of like, it's because of the way you're presenting yourself. You have to be so real and authentic. Your work has to be shown, and you have to be authentic and just real.
Happy New Year, and welcome to The Creative Brief. Today, we dive back in for part two of my epic interview with legendary freelancer Dan Petty. Now, if you missed part one, you could find it on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. And hey, while you're there, why not give the channel a subscribe? There's a lot more to come in the new year, and I'm excited to bring you some great episodes. In the meantime, I'm Brian Athey, and this is The Creative Brief. So you got into product after that, and that was like, I mean, that's a whole new world. You were in San Diego, moved to San Francisco for like the product stuff, the Y Combinator stuff?
Where do we go from here? So freelanced, right, in San Diego, still in San Diego. Then I get married. My wife moves to San Diego. She's from Nashville. So
okay.
Now we move out there. And now we're in North County. Not North. I guess we call it North County, San Diego. Cardiff by the sea. Encinitas.
Oh, yeah. Great surfing in Encinitas.
That was a dream, man. I never thought I'd leave.
I learned to surf in Encinitas. I've only been a handful of times, but that's where I learned to surf. Yeah.
Man, it's such a good time. Got stung by a stingray there. That was a fun time.
There are pushers out there. Like you could, I think that, I mean, like that's what we called them. I'm like a Louisiana kid talking about surfing, but like you could paddle out for like 200 yards and the lineup would be out there and it would bring you all the way in. Easy little like 2 foot, 3 foot, just easy pushes. They would like help you up the waves and they would just take you all the way in.
It was so fun. It was the greatest time. I hope to get back one day and I hope my kids get to experience that whole situation. But, so I was still freelancing and I started to freelance with a friend who wasn't a friend at the time, but became a friend. And we tried to make a startup together called, Holler.
Okay.
His name is Nick O'Neill. Nick had just sold a business to somebody. He owned a Facebook blog and he sold it for millions of dollars. Again, Facebook was like the hottest topic at the time, you know. Twitter was starting to pick up steam a little bit. But we started a product called Holler together, which was basically you would send a message on Holler and holler out, I guess, and say, I want to go play basketball. Anybody around to play basketball? Mm-hmm. And because, you know, we were in San Francisco, New York City and all these big cities and people would come join you. They're like, yeah, sure. Or you want to go to dinner, looking to meet some designers. Right. Basically, it was Foursquare was like a thing at the time. So it was kind of like riffing off Foursquare a bit, but like for activities, not just review type thing. Yeah. Gowalla was a thing at the time.
Oh yeah.
And so we came out with Holler. And we were top on the app store. And then it came time to like actually do it. Like, oh, do we get investors? Does Nick keep spending all his money on it? It was just us two. And I forget who, I think he made the decision because he was the brains behind everything. But he just wasn't ready for a full commitment on something like that yet. I guess I wasn't really either. Startup world's hard.
Are you like mid 20s at the time?
Yeah, dude, young. Like I'm like, and you know, he just he had his success already at the time. So, we just took a break, and what happened after that? More freelance work, you know.
So I moved back
to San Francisco.
Yeah, now I moved back for Medium, right?
Yeah, so freelancing for several years, and then Ev calls, sends me a DM. I'm hanging out with some friends. Ev sends me a DM, and on Twitter, and I see it. And I'm just like, okay, what is this? Yeah, whatever.
He's impersonating.
Just kind of ignore it. And then a few minutes go by. I'm like, wait a minute, Ev. I said at Ev. Okay. That's Ev Williams. Mm-hmm. There wasn't like spam bots or anything on Twitter at the time. There wasn't really a lot of fake stuff yet. So I go to the other room, go to the bathroom, and just so I can look at my phone. I see that it's Ev, and it's really much, "Hey, Dan, love your design work. Wonder if you would want to chat sometime." What? Yes, of course. Yeah. You know, message back all excited. And I quit drinking coffee for like 2 years before this meeting with Ev. But this is like, okay, this is like my first real like successful entrepreneur that I'm going to meet, you know? Okay. And Ev was like on top of the world at the time. You know, Twitter was huge. It was
Twitter
the biggest
was huge,
thing.
Yeah.
And for me, my heroes were Kevin Rose and Ev Williams, Biz Stone, you know, like that.
Those
Jack
guys.
Dorsey, but those
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
And so I go meet Ev at in downtown San Francisco. And before I meet him, like, man, I gotta have some coffee. Like, and I haven't had coffee for 2 years. So I went and got some espresso and just drank some.
I don't know if that's
beforehand.
A smart move, man.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, because I was like, what's going on here? You know?
Could have gone south in a lot of different ways.
Like, what's going on with this guy? He's wired. Yeah, met with him and he was just, you know, saying he liked my work and I'll never forget, he wanted me to help him re-envision the internet. I was like, what does that even mean? I don't even know what that means. Yeah. And he didn't know what it meant. And some of the other people there didn't know what it meant. But it was called Obvious Corp at first. That's
yeah, I remember that.
The venture yeah. place. And so I was like, yeah, I'll help. So I was freelancing at first. Mm-hmm. He wanted me to go full time, but I didn't know what was happening yet. And I loved freelancing so much. I didn't want to go to an office yet. So
okay,
we were freelancing, me, Lee Taylor, Dustin Sinos, and a few other folks, some developers, were just concepting literally whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
Like our goal was reinvent the internet. Like, wow, okay. So we got the person that invented Blogger and Twitter wants us to now concept something.
What's next?
To reinvent the internet. Well, he's already done it twice. Okay. All right. What do we do?
Yeah.
So we're just all just making just the most random things. And then we finally built a couple of them, but the one that ended up being Medium made the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just finished working on that. I actually made the very first full design that launched and as like the beta. And then we hired Tien and Lax to come help. Take it even further, because there's only so much you know I can do and we could do, but Tien and Lash could like they were on top of the world at the time.
That used to be my favorite site on the internet, agency site.
Everybody's Jeff and John were like on top of the design world,
visionaries
at that time.
They were amazing. Yeah,
so bringing them in was just like oh man. And then we were there. I was there until it launched, and probably a few months after launch. And then I knew my job there was kind of done. You know, I'm not the type of person that can sit and work on a project that's like just iterating. You know, it's not exciting. I told you how my career started. It's just constantly going.
Yeah.
Sitting on one thing and iterating is not my thing. Even though I'm doing it right now, but I'm slowing down and I really love just doing it, what I'm working on right now. I noticed that we were using Slack wasn't out yet. So we were using GChat, I think it was called.
Okay, sure.
AIM still a thing?
GChat was the big one.
There was GChat, and then like there was another like famous chat thing. I can't remember what it was called. And then there was another one through Basecamp,
mm-hmm.
Campfire, maybe something. Yeah, fire.
I think so. That's what it is now.
Okay. And there were like three or four of them that we were using because mm-hmm. like, you know, these people were coming from Google. They were coming from Yahoo. They were coming from everywhere. Twitter. This is a mix of developers and smart people. And they wanted to use their own thing that they were used to. Yeah, so it was like, what's going on here? People were always missing messages. And then we tried to like, just go back to email. Like that definitely wasn't working. So I messaged a friend one evening. I was like, dude, what if we did something like this? He was an engineer at Twitter. And he's like, yeah, dude, totally. That could be really cool. And we riffed on it for a while. And then we just became really passionate about what we were doing. We were basically building Slack, but it wasn't called Slack, but it literally was Slack.
Really?
It was called Hum.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then we sent an interview to Y Combinator and we got approved. They thought we were working on a cool project. And
what was that experience like? You've been doing all the jam sessions, but Y Combinator is like another level, right?
Yeah, it was. I think it was. I don't think I was fully prepared for it, to be honest. Cause I mean, I'm still freelancing and, my co-founder, was still, freelancing. We all needed money. Like we were living in San Francisco. Like,
right.
I think at the time my rent was like $4,000 a month.
Unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, bills to pay, and
not cheap bills. Coffee's like
$8
a cup.
Still paying student loans and all this stuff. Yeah. So I couldn't stop working, making money. And you get a little bit when you join Y Combinator. You did, but it wasn't, you don't want to spend it on yourself. Like that's not what you do. You gotta like put it to good use. We actually hired Tian and Lax with it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There's that creative director gene kicking in again. You got the person for it.
Exactly. It was a really interesting experience, man. I wasn't fully prepared for it. I think my co-founder wasn't either. I remember we got the day before demo day, we had to practice our rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm not good in front of stages and people. I'm an introverted person. So, and my co-founder was extroverted. He's very good at this stuff. He sings and does all this stuff. So he was the one that was going to get on stage to do the presentation. I would have froze 100%.
Oh, wow.
But he actually did freeze on rehearsal day. Thank goodness. But like, it just
like
no
with
words
a hard
came
question or just forgot his pitch.
Yeah. So my co-founder was going to do the pitch and it's rehearsal day. And there's no questions or anything. It's just you're giving your pitch. Mm-hmm. And so he gets up there and gets the mic and like, and I'm working the keynote, right over on the side. And he's just sitting there like, he's like, okay, deep breath.
Oh no, the lights hit him.
And just nothing happened. You have all these people staring at you, And I'm just
no.
Oh man, Michael, here we go. His name was Michael Jackson, by the way. He's an incredible, awesome human. For the record, I would have done the same thing, if
right.
not worse.
Right. This is like all the pressure of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and keep in mind, a little bit before this, we get rumor of Slack.
Okay.
And they already have $100 million in funding or whatever ridiculous it was. Right. Everyone we've already been talking to, showing our product to, was already using it.
They're like, this
just
is
not
just
telling
like Slack.
Us.
Cool.
Yeah. We're like, but they couldn't tell us that. They were like, bro, oh, this is so cool. This is going to be so great. Yeah. You got to keep going. We're not going to invest right now because maybe there's some, forget the conflict of interest. And they wouldn't tell us why or if it's the same kind of project, but it was Slack this whole time.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, he gets another go, we kind of like somebody else goes and then we come back and he does it and it's really great. Everybody claps really good for him, it made him feel good. But then the next day is demo day and now Slack is already out. Like people are not out, but like it's announced, like it's official.
Between the practice pitch and the actual demo day.
It's like, it's there, it's out there. So we're now have to pitch in front of Ashton Kutcher, all these famous VCs, Andreessen, like everybody's there.
Yeah.
Everybody in Silicon Valley is right there in the front row.
You got to remember like San Francisco is like it's a small town and like it's got so many eyes and so much interest and so much money that like everybody shows up and you kind of know everybody, right? I mean, like these are not a bunch of strangers in the audience. Like these are people that you don't want to flop in front of, right?
No, you don't. Yeah, exactly. And this is your shot. This is your shot. A lot of people, this is their one chance to raise some money. And it's like a big deal. You get featured on TechCrunch. Who raised money on demo day?
Yeah.
And when TechCrunch was a big thing. And so we get up there. The pitch is great. You know, he does awesome. I worked the keynote really well. We're a great team.
The front and back arrows, you dominated.
Yeah.
Crushed
but
it.
But I'll never forget this part. Like afterwards, then you do, like you get to go talk to all the VCs, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this huge line with Ashton Kutcher. And I really wanted to see what Ashton thought. You know, I was an Ashton fan, pumped and all this stuff. Of course, I want to go say hi.
An autograph on the trucker hat.
Yeah. Sign the trucker. it's my turn to talk to him. I'm like, hey, man, this is who I am. What'd you think about Hum? And he remembered the presentation. He's like, oh yeah, that's actually really cool. It's this, you know, I like this feature. I like that feature. It's like, but what do you think about Slack? How does it compare to Slack? And I was like, thanks for the time, man. Really great to meet you. I peaced out, dude. I was out of there. I had nothing to say. Nothing.
No. Love John Polk, man. Take it easy.
Yeah, dude. Like here two, you know, young guys that we can't compete with that with Slack, you know. The founder of Slack already sold Flickr. Remember Flickr?
Of course, yeah.
He knew everybody. Everybody was going to use Slack. Of course, everybody did end up using Slack. I still regret it to this day. We quit. We just went separate ways after that. It was too humiliating experience and with Slack and everything. I wish we would have continued because I think we could have still got acquired or done something really special. Sure. It was a mistake to quit, but it just was the wrong time and we needed money and it is hard to raise money and do the whole VC thing and do all the startup thing. We just didn't want to do that right away, you know?
Yeah. So you've sort of like, I feel like this competitive streak has kept you moving and has allowed you to pivot off of these things. And it's also like, I mean, bro, you've gone from, you know, you were in San Francisco. I can't remember when you made the move from San Francisco to Nashville. It was around pandemic time, right?
The year before.
As you were doing that, you also like put down, well, it's not Figma then, it was probably something else. Were you a Photoshop guy?
I was a Photoshop guy, yeah. Now I'm Figma, but I was Photoshop, heavily Photoshop.
Put down the tools and you picked up a camera and you started traveling around the country, like filming. It was like a documentary and then like the freelance TV series. Like you just decided like, I'll just pivot. I'm like really good at this and, you know, I've established myself here, but like, what if I just totally did something else? What if I just got into filmmaking?
Yeah, that was an interesting time, man. It's still a little confusing how I got here, to be honest, or made that decision. I lost a big client because I was doing video work and I do regret that. Because that client ended up selling the business for like millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I should have been a part of that, but I wouldn't be where I am today. So I am thankful for that. I was a creative director at a pretty well-known agency. I started to, and this is a little bit later in my career, but I started to just see how stressful the agency life became for people around me, not in my personal life, but other people working around me and how they were handling themselves and like how the business was operating and people were priced differently. And like I was being priced a certain thing compared to other people and like why people were only coming to this company because I was there type situations. Makes sense, yeah. And it didn't feel right. I just didn't have a good feeling about it. So I started to fall out of love with design during that time.
Okay.
And I was only at this place for a very short period of time. The company made me a great deal and they actually helped me out of a bad situation. But so forever thankful for that. But we went our separate ways And I think just to regain that interest in creativity, and just pushing my limits, I wanted to do some video work. Like, hey, what if I tell stories of designers? No one's really telling stories of designers, and especially freelancers. Maybe I could do it. I did some photography work, but never like video work, nothing, zero.
Is this around like 2015, 2016? Is that right? Can you remember? I asked because like,
dates. I'm not sure.
Like, I remember like Casey Neistat is like, you know, a hero of mine. And I remember as he got into daily vlogging, like I started, like it had tremendous influence on my creativity as well, but it was also like, oh, I want to be a runner, you know, or I want to pick up a camera, you know, like it was that kind of thing. So like, I wonder if there was any, like, if you were seeing sort of the rise of this, YouTube was like, it was a thing and there were some daily vlogs, but like Casey took it to a new level right around that time.
Yeah, totally. You're right.
It was that time period
because I was redesigning I did a couple sites for boosted boards.
One at this agency
and one on my own right afterwards, which is funny. But I remember the client came in there and they were they're the ones that brought my attention to Casey and the vlogging. I wasn't aware of it, and I was already boosting around San Francisco, but then I saw Casey, and that's helped inspire getting a camera too. And I actually started a vlog too, but it was really kind of for boosted board in a way.
Sure.
But I ended up enjoying it. And then but before that, actually I'm now confusing my timelines. That's when I started vlogging side. When did I do the freelance video? I guess it's right around that time too.
I think it was following that.
Yeah, maybe it was following that.
It's sort of in that period between, I feel like it is. I mean, like I'm outside observer, but I feel like it was in that time between San Francisco and Nashville. There was sort of this like video period.
Yeah, it's so confusing. Trying to keep track of everything. But yeah, and that and I remember so either the vlog camera was my first camera. I think maybe that's what it was. The vlog camera was my first camera, which is like a little Canon something. But I wanted to do maybe take it a step further again, just to
see how
get
far you
my
take
creativity
it.
Back mm-hmm. and just see what I could do. And I remember reaching out to Sony, some random email. Hey, I'm thinking about traveling the country, filming some freelancers and trying to put it on YouTube or something. I had I still don't have any really subscribers on YouTube. I don't know why they would have helped me or anything, but they actually ended up letting me borrow camera gear. Like, all this camera gear. I'm talking
what?
Like
shoot your shot. 50, shoot your shot, everybody.
Camera gear.
Slide into those DMs.
And I was like, are you serious? And so they sent me like these two luggages of camera, all these lenses and like the Sony A7, the first one that came out.
Yeah, yeah.
I had two of them. I ended up buying a camera and a lens from them, you know, because of how awesome that was of them. But yeah, and then just.
But no, that's not the end of the story. I mean, you were working on Reg for a little while. You went.
Yeah. So I did this project to learn so much, man. It was
Premiere's
like,
not easy. Come to find out.
Oh my goodness. No, it's not. And you know, audio is the most important thing when it comes to video. And then, you know, you have to set up everything. You got to set up the audio. You got to do the lighting. You got to make sure you hit record. You got to make sure you have your notes. You got to make sure all this stuff. And I was the only one doing
extra batteries, extra film cards, extra everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, can you give me an hour of your time or 2 hours of your time? Like, I felt so bad for these people. And then here I am like sweating, you know, getting all this stuff set up. And I had no idea what I was doing. No clue. But it turned out pretty decent. I'm proud. I'm very proud of it. I'm not proud of what happened after it launched. I launched it and then had some people, this was my first time really experiencing hate on Twitter, I think. The platform sort of evolved into a new,
it wasn't just like a put your thoughts out there and get responses. It was, it was suddenly there was a lot of traction on provocation is the right word. Yeah. When people mess with you a little bit, or that hate gets rewarded, which is,
it does. Super sad. And it really had a huge effect on me. I really regret that it did, to be honest. It shouldn't. We should not let these people bother. I don't care who they are. Mm-hmm. We should not let them bother us talking down to us. But this project, I put so much into this project. I think that's why it bothered me the most. And these people were friends. I'm cool with everybody until suddenly I find out I'm not. Because a lot of people don't like me on lot of people like me on Twitter. But there are a few people, other like well-known designers, that just for some reason just resent me, and I will never know why.
It's that thing where you can get 100 positive comments and you remember the one negative one.
It's just
the one. I mean, we're talking about volume for you. You're up there on your follower count. So, I mean, even if you're just looking at a 1 or 2 or 3%, that's a lot of people talking shit.
Yeah, exactly. And then all the hate was like, just the like not professional, high quality enough for, I'm like, dude, I didn't even know what I was doing. But this, that was a very small percentage. Most people were like just so encouraged by it, and it really had an effect on people. But the other part, the main part that bothered me was when people were saying there wasn't like a lot of self-promotion or video work on design stuff at the time. Mm-hmm. And they were like, who do you think you are being able to talk about, you're not the king of freelancing. Like, why do you feel so special? Like, you put your, cause I said, something about filmed by Dan Petty, filmed and edited by Dan Petty or something like that. Right. And a couple of people like made such a big deal about it. Some really well-known designers. And I reached out to them. I was like, and then they, a lot of, someone were liking the tweet. And I reached out to a person I thought I was friends with. I was like, hey, why did you like that tweet? I just saw you like that. Did I do something wrong? And you're like, and their own response was, do you just send DMs to people that like tweets against you? That was their response. They didn't answer my question or say what I did wrong. It was just rude and hateful.
Why are
thing.
You taking like, this seriously? I was just being a jerk. Like, why would you even care? Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I'm sorry for caring and wanting to be your friend. I respect you, but why is there no, I didn't understand it. It literally made no, and I even like had message conversations with people like, did I do something wrong here? And they're like, no, what are you talking about? No, this is, you did something great.
Oh man.
But just because of who it was, it just like, and so I just stopped working on the project. Cause it got me down.
Really? It affected you that much?
Yeah. Yep. I just stopped working on it.
Does the footage still exist? Like,
Yeah. Oh, it's up there. Yeah. Some of them's got 100,000 views on YouTube. Oh,
I know, but I don't know. Did the full length, you were doing something full length at one point, right?
Yep. The full length did not fully come to get made. There was a lot more interviews that didn't get edited. It just stopped me in my tracks literally the day it launched. Also, another thing, the day it launched, so it was like number one on Product Hunt and like featured everywhere. I was super proud of that, super proud of the site we made,
the freelance TV site.
Yeah,
oh, it was great. You had the little the video player that dropped into the bottom was doing that.
It was made by the legendary developer Nick Jones. Okay. Who's at Stripe now. And the best, probably still one of the best developers I've ever worked with. Mm-hmm. Now I remember like he did something or I did something wrong. Not wrong, but like when we put the site up, it was kind of just, we didn't know what we were doing. YouTube wasn't tracking the views. So we had it up for a whole day and YouTube wasn't tracking views because of the way it was played. something like that. So then I was like, why is there, how do I have all these visitors? But yet the YouTube, the videos only have like 50 views. Like it didn't make any sense. And then he was like, oh man, I forgot to do this or that.
From
or
the
whatever.
Way that it was
like,
no! The way the site was built.
Yeah.
Oh my
gosh. The whole time it was featured and you get shared everywhere. Like people, they weren't able to fully.
As long as they were watching it on the site, it wasn't tracking the view.
Man. Yes. Oh, no. And I was just like, dude.
Because the site experience was better than watching it on YouTube, if I remember. Like you guys had taken so much care to like curate this experience on the actual site, and it was sticky. Like you wanted to just keep going to each additional video. Bro, they didn't track. Yeah, they didn't track any of that.
No, that was a big bummer too, man. That really hit me, hit my ego there.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things is it's super interesting to hear you talk about that because, you know, we will put folks up on a pedestal. I'm sure you have folks that you admire and look up to and who you follow, and you forget that, you know, they're struggling with the same things. They're people too. And they're affected by the same, not just like creative burnouts, but like all these other factors that, you know, anybody would be affected with just as a human. To hear that, like, I mean, you've had stuff like we listed out at the beginning. You've had work featured with all the best clients, and you've got the follower count, and you've got the projects, and you've got the access, and you've got the, but to hear that you're still taking it on the chin sometimes, and it messes with you. Like it's just kind of interesting to hear. You kind of forget about that when, you know, there's a Dan Petty out there tweeting every day with an audience that you just feel like is there for the good vibes.
Yeah. It's the most frustrating part. It really is. I'm used to people not liking my work. Like, you know, with clients, you're going to get no's from clients and you got to go back and redesign. That's a whole nother story. Like feedback is great. You know, that's how you grow. But it's just when people are just straight up rude, you know, and like for no reason. And like, they just jump into your world to be rude real quick and then jump back out of your world. You know, I just wish. I wish we didn't have to deal with that. I wish other people didn't have to deal with it. I've grown to just kind of brush it off a little, you know, as much as I can. It still bothers me and sometimes.
Have you seen the stuff that goes on with Brett at DesignJoy? Have you seen are you familiar with him at all?
Yep.
So I think he's under a tremendous amount of scrutiny and a tremendous amount of fire online. And, you know, he doesn't pull back the curtain much, but I watch him, who has done something pretty different, I think. You know, he was one of the originators of this, like, design as a subscription idea. And you've seen dozens and dozens of copycats, hundreds of copycats over the last year. But it's still like this, there's sort of this race to the bottom mentality that he gets attacked with a lot. Have you paid attention a lot over the last year, sort of this transition from, I mean, as a freelancer, obviously, I'm super curious about how you manage your workload and interact with your clients. But like, have you noticed this transition from kind of this high design thinking, high dollar packages, big, massive projects, sort of turning into or converting into something that is more like these subscription services, just quick and fast. And I really just want the service of design. I don't want the strategy and the build out and I just need the service. Like, what is your take on this so far?
Yeah, it's a good question. I honestly haven't put too much thought into it. I'm just happy people are making money at the end of the day. I use Fiverr if you want to. Like, I'm the type of person that's like, it's valuable. It's valuable to somebody. So use it, you know? Mm-hmm. And people hate on this. The same people I hate on subscriptions, hate on Fiverr and all the stuff out there, you know, that makes people money. If people are making money, all for it. I mean, the subscription stuff has been around for a long time. I think Brett probably made it the most famous, you know, just talking about it.
Sure. Because
a lot of us don't talk about pricing or anything like that at all, you know?
Right.
So Brett came out.
He was bold. Yeah.
And you know, talked about it. And when you mention you're making $1 million in a year or whatever, obviously everyone wants to copy that and do the same thing. Rightfully so. I mean, yeah, sure.
And criticize it if they can't, right?
Yeah, and criticize if you can't, for sure. Same goes with everything. You know, I remember I had a tweet out looking for a client that will pay me $20,000 to do a landing page for them, and I'll feature it in my course or video. A video or course. It had to do with a video.
Sure.
And the hate that I got. Like, what? Do you know how much I actually make usually on landing pages? Often more than $20,000 for one page.
So where does this come from? Where, like, okay, so you're in this career. Like, think about like an engineer or a lawyer or think about any other profession. There's not a whole lot of like accountants getting online and being like, 20% commissions on that tax return. Are you nuts? Like, I only charge 15 and I don't understand this. Like, when there are people who are successful, the instinct of, you know, quote unquote design Twitter is to just eviscerate that person, like to just talk so much crap about them. And I don't understand why the mentality is not like, hey, how did you do that? Or what is your process like? Or what are you delivering that's so much different from me? Or am I just underselling myself? Like, that's the big realization. Like, when you realize that there's somebody out there who has figured out a system to, you know, stay balanced. I know him through Twitter, but to see, you know, he says he has a balanced life and he's pulling in $1 million a year. Like, why is everybody not like, oh man, let's figure out a different or a better or a cool way to do that? Like, why is the instinct of design Twitter, do you think, to like snipe so much?
It's easy. Just because it's easy. It's easier to do that than it is to go make $1 million. Well, and time and time again, people will take the easy route. And what will get you a quick attention, a quick few likes,
but
is hating on somebody.
You know, when we hire people, I say this all the time. And anytime I talk to like graduating classes or young designers, I always say, like, you might send in your application and your resume. The first thing I look at is your socials. Like, the first thing that I check out is, where's your work? What does that site look like? What do you look like on Instagram? What do you look like on Twitter? And if all of your posts are just negative and critical and snarky and mean, I don't feel like you're going to come in as a good hire. I don't feel like you're going to be a good teammate. I certainly don't think I want to hire you to work with. Like, what? Easy, yeah. But like, sometimes you want to do like the hard right instead of the easy wrong, right? Like, sometimes you want to find a higher ground than just talking shit to people.
Yeah. I can't fully wrap my head around why people do this. Like, I mean, my only thing I can think of is like when I see somebody like Brett that, you know, makes $1 million a year, or, you know, Matt D. Smith that makes a course that he works on forever and makes maybe a few million. I'm not really sure. I'm assuming.
I love Matt.
Some other people that just make, you know, a lot of money. My gut reaction is, why? Why did you do that? How did you get that money? You know, that should have been me, or something like that. You know, like, but then quickly I'm like, oh, Matt, good job. Yeah. You know,
in real life, you would give that person a high five and a hug. You wouldn't just like
huge
glare
hug,
them
like,
down.
Let's go.
Right?
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
You know, dinner on you tonight.
That's exactly right. Like, that's
but on Twitter, it's like, you just, I don't know. People just, they let out that first little instinct, like, of jealousy out. They just splurt it out.
Well, that's the kind of community that we could have. And I miss Dribbble a lot. Like, I miss the old days of like grunge textures and noise in Dribbble. Put a little noise on everything and make it look great. I miss that. And you know, there is sort of the counter. There was always this argument on Dribbble that like, there's never any real feedback. It's just people like, you know, giving thumbs up and high fives and, hey, I love your work. And that's great. But I wonder if there's some kind of new platform or happy medium. Did you, were you serious at all about going after Dribbble?
No. Oh, if they sold it to me, yeah, I'd 100% buy it. I mean, if I had money, I'd have to like, you know, get some help there, but I'd take it over. I think I'd be great at it. I honestly think I would be really good at it. I think I would need a couple friends help. But there are a lot of ways, like on the business side, I would need help.
Sure.
But showing work, getting clients and all that stuff, that's my thing, man. Like I'd be great at it. Making connections with people, connecting the dots. I would be thrilled to do something like that. My dream is still to make the first, like, well, first there probably is one already, but just my style of a just free online school that like teaches everybody everything, and it has all your portfolio stuff, has all the clients coming there, and like Google comes to me and Google's like, Dan, I'm going to give you $1 million a year and you need to give me, what would that be, like eight designers every year. Mm-hmm. Done. Easy, Google.
Like an
and
incubator.
At the same time, you know, Microsoft's doing the same thing, or I'm just naming random companies now. They're doing the same thing. And I'm, you know, the company's making $50 million a year and we're having to spit out 50 designers or 100 designers a year to these companies. Easy.
That's smart.
Easy.
Yeah.
Why is no one doing that? Like, I want to do that so bad. So I would take over Dribbble in a heartbeat. But they're switching it up just because of financials, because of money. So right. You can't hate on that. You know, you got to do what you got to do for business stuff. It's unfortunate the customer has to. We're not the customer. The customer is the people paying for the ads and the job posts. That's the cost. That's the real customer.
Well, I mean,
we're just
finding ways to lift up talent, finding ways to, like, you know, nurture folks, to share all the stuff that you've learned over time. I think that's a super admirable thing that you do on a regular basis. And I challenge people to think about it in the way that I've observed you do it. It's like, you know, there are ways to find opportunities and partnerships, and there are ways to give back that are sustainable. You know, like I'm always interested when, like, I think this just happened to you the other day. You were like putting out all these free courses and all these free reviews, which, like, you know, when you'll review somebody's portfolio, like, I even called some of those folks, you know, like I was looking for a Webflow developer at that time. And like, like the amount of DMs and messages that those people must have gotten just off that exposure is so super valuable. But like, you didn't ask for anything, but just in a mention, you were like, but my, you know, this took me 6 hours. My computer's so slow. And Webflow was like, hey, Dan, hey, dude. Dan, what's up? I love that. Like that pays off. It really does.
It does pay off, because I may or may not have a brand new computer.
Hey, let's go, man.
Because of it. So I haven't fully made it a announcement yet, but yeah, Webflow purchased a computer for me, so I don't have it here yet. It's gonna December, it'll arrive. Yeah, but they're like, yeah, we in DMs, hey, we love what you're doing. If you can keep going, these reviews going, we'd love to help you, you know, with a computer, and just, you know, shout out Webflow from time to time. And I'm like, dude, oh, of course.
Well,
Are you kidding me?
It's so valuable. And like, it's such a weird time, because there's like, the economy is weird right now, and AI is such a, like, it's like this presence. I don't know if it's an ominous one or if it's a, like, a brave new world one. It's super exciting. And I think that there will be tons of people that figure out ways to capitalize with it. But just reminding people to get their work out there and play the game a little bit, I think is so encouraging for so many folks.
It's the most important part, man. Like, I don't understand it. People follow what other people do, right? And right now you're not getting the best guidance out there because everyone's just tweeting. For one, Twitter is the place to be right now. Let's be real. We don't have a Dribble or Behance or things like they exist, but Twitter's where the clients are right now. And people are just tweeting out like random design advice and the most trying to be like influencers, really, which is fine.
ChatGPT, I need 10 tweets on design advice.
That's what it seems like. Yeah. And I don't know if these people realize that. Like a lot of them are my friends, and I just see this stuff. I'm like, oh my goodness, you think you're advancing and you're making these steps, which some of them are gaining more followers from some of the stuff because they're doing a little bit better job at it than some of the others. But others just aren't getting any traction on it. And it's just kind of like, it's because of the way you're presenting yourself. You have to be so real and authentic, mm-hmm. along with showing your work. Your work has to be shown, and you have to be authentic and just real. Yeah. Like, that's why you'll see me. I don't just tweet about design stuff or whatever. I'll tweet something about my kids or my chickens or whatever, coffee stuff. And I ask questions on Twitter. Sometimes I'll delete them if I get my answers, which unfortunately now destroys your engagement. Ah, it's so frustrating. I've done that forever. I'll tweet some of a question because I need it for work, and I delete it because I don't want everyone seeing everything. Mm-hmm. But now that affects your how much reach you get. I was like, oh god. Okay. You got to show your work, and you got to constantly show it. That's how I got all my work early on. Mm-hmm. But Dan, you're not showing your work right now. I'm not looking for work. I don't need work. I have work. I'm not looking for work.
And here's the cheat code I've always found is that, like, especially as you're climbing, you know, those early years when you're just, you know, you're the shark and you can't stop moving. You want to appear to be an expert, and you want to have all this process, mm-hmm. and you want to, like, I want to onboard and I want to talk strategy and I want all these deliverables and memos and I need a contract, a big beefy contract that makes me look like I'm super professional. And like the clients that are always the happiest to work with me, at least, are the ones that have fun, you know, like they need something done. They might not know exactly what it is. And you have the power to like unlock their imagination, to put it all into an app or in a website or in a brand that becomes tactile and they can experience. And it's so much fun. There's so much fun there. And people, I think, because they get so worried about being the expert and having the process and doing it like all the big agencies, they forget that like this could actually be like a really enjoyable experience, not just for the service provider, but the actual client. Like, they can have a blast. And I mentioned something the other day. I saw this great tweet. It was like, you know, designers or clients, don't forget that, like, when you're nice, like, I want to give you so much more stuff than you paid for. Like, when that experience is fun, how many times do you unlock that, like, OG Dan Petty that just wants to keep doing iteration after iteration, keep showing mm-hmm. option after option? Because like, you're loving it and they're loving it, and the momentum is there. You're vibing off of each other.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? It's all, yeah, a lot of, it's all about momentum when you're going. Go to a car dealership and talk to a car salesman. It's the worst experience you will ever get, you know, in communicating one-on-one with somebody, right?
Yeah.
That's how a lot of these designers act. And that's how they're treating their clients. And it's so sad, you know, like, your client, your goal should be able to, you should want to make their life easier. Mm. You want to become friends with them, right? You're trying to get a relationship with them. You're not constantly trying to sell them the stuff and trying to prove yourself and all this stuff. You're working together. It just, that's what I always text my clients when we're working. I make sure that I work how do they want to communicate? That's how we'll communicate. I send them stuff as I go. Just, hey, what do you think about this? Yeah. Not like, hey, I designed this thing because of this and because of this and because of this theory and this theory and because of this. No, just like, hey, this looks pretty cool right here. You know, this might work like this. What do you think? It's always, what do you think, client? Mm-hmm. What do you think, client? Mm-hmm. And when they want my expert explanation, I'll give it to them.
Sure.
A reason why. But you got to make them happy too. You need to make what they want. We're not always the smartest person in the room, you know?
You know who's the best at this is I'm working on a project right now with Timmy Ham.
And, Timmy's great.
And Timmy, he sends all voice memos, like not a lot of text. It's all voice memos. Yeah. And so, you know, you'll check your phone and you've got these two or three messages. Mm-hmm. And like, sure, they're project check-ins, or he might, you know, be prefacing like, I'm about to send you like the latest or whatever. But usually it's just like, yo, how's your day, man? I hope you're doing good. Exactly. Keep crushing it. Like, he sent me a message on Thanksgiving. It was just like, my best to your family, man. Like, I hope you're doing great. Love working with you. And I thought like, man, I follow him. He's all over the world right now. He's all over the country. He's doing like these huge epic projects. And like, he treats me like I'm a buddy because like, that's just his style. And I can't impart that enough on anybody that's trying to get a career going. Like, you are not trying to provide a algorithmic machine learned experience. You're not trying to spit out something that is all about process to a T and all about that contract and exactly the deliverables. It's an experience. It is a like, it is a joyful, fun experience that can be that way if you don't spend all your time just being snarky on Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah, Timmy's great at it. I get those voice memos often, and they're great. That's what it takes. Being real, you know, not so formal all the time. That's what people want. But I don't know.
Well, Dan, for a... for a 30-minute podcast, you have exceeded expectations. Thank you so much for your time. I could talk to you all day. I hope we can do this again.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
But I'm super grateful that you've shared so much today and gone over and just kind of let us in behind the curtain on what it's like to be Dan Petty. It's been a great conversation. Yeah.
Man, thanks for having me. This always fun. Always down to chat anytime if you want to keep it going later. And yeah, good luck with the podcast and everything, man. So super exciting. I'm glad you're doing it. It's going to be really, really valuable to people.
Thank you so much. Tell everybody if they don't know you or follow you already, where can they find you?
On Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. Twitter or X, at Dan Petty, Dan with two N's. That's the only place you'll find me. And you'll see everything there. So hopefully I'll see you out there.
Gotcha. Thank you so much, man. We will we'll talk to you again soon. Best of luck, Dan.
Likewise. See you, man.
Thanks for tuning in to part two of my interview with Dan Petty. I hope you liked this episode. And if you did, be sure to leave a like or a comment wherever you get your podcasts. And by all means, share this episode with your friends. It helps me spread the reach of this podcast and produce more episodes. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Brian Athey. See you next time.